I'd now like to join Jill Bevilacqua for part 18 of her very ambitious series, The Vatican Centuries. While last week we heard how Gregory the VII was kidnapped by bandits and then freed by the people, how the Pope clashed with the Emperor who excommunicated him, today we move on to a truce between the Empire and the Papacy with a famous concordat. But I won't give too much away. Stay tuned for this programme, written and presented by Jill and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.
Chapter 18, Empire and Papacy, the Truce.
The greatest movement dominating the 12th century in Europe was undoubtedly that of the Crusades.
But a truce between empire and papacy was also reached with the signing of the Concordat of Worms in 1122. The 50-year-old controversy over investiture had ended in a compromise.
The century was also marked by lively theological dispute between giants such as Abelard and Bernard of Clairvaux.
In 1170, the world was horrified by the murder of Thomas à Becket in Canterbury Cathedral. And in the same year, Pope Alexander III laid down rules for the canonization of saints.
With the signing of the Concordat of Worms, Pope and Emperor were at peace. And as a result, Rome saw a period of tranquility. There was none of the usual street fighting, and Calixtus II was able to give his attention to the city's welfare. Walls and aqueducts were restored, together with the churches, which had been used as fortified castles by the warring factions.
In the Lateran Council of 1123, the Pope forbade a repetition of this, warned the laity against stealing votive lamps from the altars, and threatened anathema to whoever should do violence to pilgrims. He had the floor of St. Peter's relaid, and restored the main altar above St. Peter's tomb.
Towards the middle of the century, there was a great flowering of artists, and it was about this time that the work of the Cosmati family began to appear in the churches. This was a new art, similar to mosaic, in which fragments of coloured marble were placed together, thus forming an architectural sculpture. Pavements made of these sculptures can still be seen in many of today's churches in Rome.
If we descend to the crypt of today's Basilica of St. Peter's, to the part known as the Old Grottoes, we come across a fine sarcophagus of antique red granite of the 3rd century. It's the tomb of Nicholas Breakspeare, elected as Pope Hadrian IV on the 5th of December 1154, and the only Englishman ever to have occupied the See of Peter. He was also the only non-Italian pope to hold office for the 137 years between 1124 and 1261.
When Hadrian came to the throne, Rome was under the influence of the preaching of Arnold of Brescia, the monk reformer who'd become the leader of the Republican movement and who was one of the most prominent opponents of the temporal power of the papacy.
Most of Rome was in the hands of the commune, and for months after his election, Hadrian lived entrenched in St. Peter's, unable to reach the Lateran. He'd paid the Roman citizens the sums of money they expected as part of the election celebrations, but this didn't prevent the constant attacks on the clergy. When Hadrian asked for the removal of Arnold, there was an outcry, and a cardinal was killed.
The Pope wasted no more time, but acted. He put the whole city under an interdict. All religious ceremonies were suspended, church doors were barred, the bells were silent. The dead were buried outside consecrated ground, and the few weddings which took place were celebrated in the cemeteries.
At first, the Romans, in conflict with the church, remained indifferent. But as the days went by, they began to feel the full weight of the punishment. Not least among the material negative effects was the interruption of the flow of pilgrims, bringing foreign gold.
The crowds began to gather outside the barred church doors, begging for pardon. The senators went to the Pope and offered to expel Arnold and his followers in exchange for appeal of the interdict. The Pope agreed, and on the 23rd of March revoked the decree. The people accompanied him in solemn procession to St. John Lateran as the bells pealed out from the 400 bell towers of the city.
The 12th century is illumined by a personality of extraordinary magnitude. It's been said of him that he carried the 12th century on his shoulders. His name, Bernard of Clairvaux.
Bernard was born in 1090 near Dijon, of a noble Burgundian family. He was fair, slim and good-looking, and possessed of that kind of personality known as magnetic. When he left his father's castle to become a monk, he was followed by his four brothers, his father and 30 young men of the local nobility. He joined the Cistercian order at Citeaux, but 3 years later was sent to found a new monastery at Clairvaux. In a short time, it became one of the chief centres of the Cistercian order, and Bernard himself one of the most influential religious forces in Europe.
In his lifetime, Bernard founded 68 Cistercian monasteries, assisted at numerous councils, intervened in countless disciplinary matters, and mediated between sovereigns in dispute. He won acceptance of the rightfully elected Pope Innocent II against the anti-Pope Anacletus, and Innocent kept his champion by his side in his travels, during which Bernard reconciled city after city to Innocent's rule, while refusing invitations to become bishop here, archbishop there. He denounced persecution of the Jews and alleviated the oppression of the peasants. He fought heretics and opposed and confuted Abelard. He was a tireless writer and efficacious preacher. He wrote treatises, sermons, and over 500 letters to popes, emperors, bishops, and even one to the Roman people, when his former disciple, Eugenius III, had been obliged to flee the city. Bernard could not conceive of the city of Rome as being in possession of any but the Pope. Bernard was concerned at the growing daily weight of business which surrounded the popes of the mid-12th century. In 1150, he wrote to his protégé, Eugenius III, to beware of being taken over by the new condition the papacy found itself in.
Where shall I begin? Let me begin with the pressure of business. If you hate it, I sympathize with you. If you don't, I mourn all the more, because the unconscious patient is in the greater danger. See where all this damnable business is leading you. You are wasting your time. I will speak to you as Jethro spoke to Moses and say, what is this thing that you are doing to the people? Why do you sit from morning till evening listening to litigants? What fruit is there in these things? They can only create cobwebs.
Bernard wrote 5 essays to Eugenius on the duties and responsibilities of his high office and enlisted the support of the cardinals on his behalf. In 1147, the Pope commissioned him to preach the Second Crusade, which he did throughout France and Germany. Its failure was a bitter disappointment to him. Bernard of Clairvaux died in 1153, was canonized only 21 years later. In 1830, the honey-sweet doctor was declared a doctor of the Church.
Although somewhat impetuous and obstinate, Bernard was at all times moved by charity. The love and the grace of God and the resultant activity of man provided the central theme of Bernard's message to his age.
Let us love because we are loved. It is our interest and the interest of our own people. We rest in what we love. To those we love, we offer this rest. To love in God means to have charity. To seek to be loved through God means to serve charity.